B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
I remember I had to get a penicillin shot because I caught the grunge one time, but that's about all I remember of it.
There's Eric Kretz from Stone Temple Pilots and his thoughts about grunge today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. He was joined by singer Jeff Gut as he talked about working with the DeLeo brothers and Eric on the new album.
Songwriting is such an intimate thing, and they're so good at it that when I walked into the room, I just had to kind of follow their lead.
We talk a lot about the new record, which Robert told me back in an interview about a month ago. It should be coming out in the early part of 2020. They say it's a little bit different, and they're going to tour differently on it as well, which Eric also does explain. Plus, where's Eric's Grammy and his other awards? Does he display them in his home?
For the longest time, all the gold records and all the awards, I just kind of kept in the boxes, and then kind of one day I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to put out everything.
Up second, it's Rival Sons frontman Jay Buchanan. We talked about rubbing shoulders with some of these rock and roll legends like Black Sabbath and now Stone Temple Pilots.
Anytime you get to, you know, talk with these artists backstage, you get a keyhole peek into their world and the way they make it work and the way they have procured their longevity.
We talk about their latest record, Feral Roots, as well as some Detroit legends. And how did moving to Franklin, Tennessee affect his songwriting?
You know, invariably, I think that anything you do is going to influence everything you do.
It's Jay Buchanan from Rival Sons and Jeff Gut and Eric Kretz from Stone Temple Pilots today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast. Doing it once again, this time around with Stone Temple Pilots and Rival Sons. They were in town over the weekend. Had a chance to catch up with Jeff and Eric, like I said in the intro, and also Jay from Rival Sons. We had some great conversations. But first, I got to go back to my interview I did on Monday with Diamond Dave and from his book, Van Halen Rising. We've got the author, Greg Renop. He's a Van Halen historian. And first of all, Greg, what did you think of the interview with David Lee Roth that just took place? I mean, were you shocked by some of the revelations he made?
Well, you know, as a fan who's been following the band extensively since the early 80s, to kind of hear Roth say yesterday to you that it's over, basically Van Halen is over, and it's like part of your life feels like it's gone. It's just like kind of hard to explain as a fan, where it's just that's been a constant in your life, thinking, well, Van Halen's going to tour or they're touring. And it's just, you know, there's always a future where something was going to happen with Van Halen, and to Roth to say it as if it's a closed chapter of a book in his life that he's moving forward without it, and it's not going to ever reconstitute itself as a band, was kind of, that's the way I took it, at least. That was pretty shocking.
Yeah. And Dave, you know, said a few weeks ago in an interview, as you were just talking about off the air, that, you know, he was kind of the face of Van Halen moving forward and stuff. Now, of course, there's all sorts of rumors out there about Eddie's health. And, you know, that was one of the questions I actually had, but they only give you like 10 minutes. And sometimes Dave goes off. And if you haven't heard the interview yet, you can go back and listen to it. But sometimes Dave goes off in different directions. But I didn't get a chance really to ask him about Eddie's health, but I mean, what have you heard?
You know, I have heard, like everybody else, these rumors. I mean, Roth has kind of commented on it himself. I mean, to me, you know, he said to an answer in an interview he did a couple weeks ago, something to the effect that, well, I've heard the rumors like you too about Eddie's health, and that was unsettling. And then to hear him say that Ed isn't going to be able to answer the bell, this was in another interview. I don't know what to make of that, but it certainly is, there's a lot of looming questions, and I really hope that Eddie's in good health and none of these things are actually true that people have been speculating about, and that we'll get answers soon. It'd be nice to know, you know, just what the situation is with Van Halen going forward. In other words, that the band will make a statement to say Dave's moved on or we're over as a band or whatever it is, because, you know, when in the absence of information, rumors take hold, and, you know, nobody knows for sure outside that tight circle around the band itself, which is extremely close. And so I'm certainly hoping any rumors that might be out there about his health are untrue, that he's in great health, and that we'll be seeing Eddie soon out in public.
Yeah. Did you see the tour in 2015?
I did.
How many times have you seen Van Halen?
I've seen them first in 1984 tour, so five or six times. You know, I was thrilled like everybody else when they got back together with Roth, but I saw them with Sammy a number of times, and it's been, you know, that's what I mean. It's been a constant part of my life, and I think a lot of people who go back further than I do, back to the 70s as a Van Halen fan when they started coming through, Detroit, Cobo Hall, the Masonic Temple, all these old venues people will remember. It's been a constant in people's life, and we really, you know, as fans, it's kind of hard to imagine that there will be no more future for Van Halen.
Now, are you a Sammy or a Dave guy?
Yeah, I'm a Dave first guy. That's what I got into, was Van Halen with Dave on the 84 era. That was when I kind of was a sophomore in high school, kind of caught on with that. But, I sometimes joke around on my Twitter account about Sammy, but I don't have any particular beef or dislike for Sammy. And in fact, you know, I have a lot of admiration for him as an entrepreneur and as a musician. I mean, there aren't a lot of people who have had the career he had. He started with 73 with Montrose, doing that first album with Ted Templeman, the later Van Halen producer, and he had this long run up to today where he's still viable, outworking, and it's, you know, I don't have anything but admiration for that and his contributions from that standpoint.
Yeah, I think we're about the same age. As a matter of fact, my mother only bought me one record, and I'm not even sure to this day why she came home with it, but she brought me home the brand new Van Halen 1984 on vinyl, you know, and it's the only record I remember her buying me as a kid. So, and I'm with you. It's like Sammy Hagar. I've met Sammy Hagar a bunch of times. He's one of the nicest guys. He's always willing to be the ringleader of the party. And I've met Dave before too. And Dave is very rock star, and Dave is very eccentric when you meet him and stuff. And I really like Dave a lot too, so I'm kind of in that thing where it's like I don't know which way to go here as well, but I do like the crunchy part of Van Halen, but even Sammy brings his own thing to it. But hey, real fast, let's plug your book here. You got this book coming out in April about Ted Templeman, so tell us about that.
Yeah, I got to know Ted, who produced Van Halen's first six records and then worked on the Four Unlawful Carnal Knowledge record with Andy Johns. Got to know him when I did my book, Van Halen Rising, which came out a few years ago. And Ted and I talked, and Ted was ready to tell a story about his whole career, stretching back to 1971 when he did the first Doobie Brothers record, all the way up to the 90s, where he worked, you know, Warner Brothers all those years, and produced everyone from Little Feat to Michael McDonald to Bullet Boys to Joan Jett, Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, Done with Mirrors. And it was a real honor to tell a story. He's a great guy, and I've learned so much from just talking to him, interviewing him for this book, and working with him to get the words on the page, because he's a true musical savant and just the greatest guy. So it's been a tremendous honor. It'll be out in April, and it's his authorized life story. It's called Ted Templeman. Yeah, it's available for pre-order now at Amazon if you search for Ted Templeman.
Now, shouldn't there be something after the Ted Templeman? Every book that's out there right now, there's got to be a subtitle, right? Isn't that part of the law now or something?
Yeah, it's called Ted Templeman, a platinum producer's life in music. Yeah,
okay, there so, you go. Yeah. See, all right, perfect. See, I knew that there was something else, so we were missing something. So, dude, I'll tell you what, if anyone out there listening is just Googles Ted Templeman, I mean, you have to have at least a few of his records in your collection. I mean, there's just, you can't avoid it almost.
Yeah, I mean, I always say if you listen to classic rock radio for 1 hour, you're going to hear something about the Doobie Brothers or Van Halen or Little Feat or Carly Simon or something. He did so many records and had so many hits. Eric Clapton, Behind the Sun, so Forever Man, all that stuff. That's Ted working on that record. So it was a great experience. And I think it's going to be something that, whether you're a Van Halen fan or not, there's going to be a tremendous number of revelations about how records are made and how the industry works. And again, of course, give Ted's take on the whole Van Halen saga with Sammy Hagar and David Lee Roth, because Ted was mixed up right in the middle of that, since he had produced Dave as a solo artist, Sammy as a solo artist, and then had produced the Van Halen record. So Ted was kind of front and center of that whole thing when Van Halen was imploding and reconstituting with Sammy.
I'll tell you what, as I talked about in my interview with David Lee Roth from Monday on the Talkin' Rock podcast, that lineup, that solo lineup, I know Billy Sheehan a little bit because I grew up in Buffalo, and I actually recorded my first demo tapes to get on the radio as an 18-year-old kid with Dave Constantino, who was the singer of Talus, right? And I mean, with Steve Vai and Greg Bissonette and stuff, I mean, I've said it before, that might be the best 80s rock band, and I brought that up, you know, to Dave the other day. Of course, I don't know, I don't even know how Dave answered that question, but he did what Dave does, and he danced around it a little bit. So, what'd you think of that band?
Yeah, that's one that Ted did as well, and Ted did that one with, he did the Crazy from the Heat EP, the California Girls, and then came right back and did Eat 'Em and Smile, which, yeah, is one of my favorites. I mean, Shy Boy, I'm Easy, That's Life by Frank Sinatra. I mean, yeah. It had all that diversity, and of course, that that Ice Pick to the forehead stuff with the elephant gun and all the grave shred stuff with Billy and Steve Vai. It's an incredible record. And those albums, that's what I mean about the end of Van Halen. That's sort of that whole texture of that stuff, all those songs and those records sort of have that over. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around, because that's always been that Van Halen saga, whether it's Sammy or Dave or Eddie and Alex, whoever was involved with it. It seemed like that was always like a, you know, like almost like rooting for a sports team or something. It was like a constant in your life. You said like, oh, the Lions are no longer going to play football or something like that. The Red Wings are defunct, right?
Well, some people around here wish that would happen, actually. But.
I hear you.
No, I got you. I'll tell you what, normally in this part of the podcast, I'm talking with my guy, Al Beck, who does the news for us, and he's not very good at it. So I'm going to hold him off till the end of the podcast. But are you a Stone Temple Pilots fan?
You know, 90s stuff like that, anything that was on the radio in the 90s, I can get my head around. Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots, yeah, and Rival Sons, I'm a big fan of as well. I heard you guys plugging their appearance, the great band, and yeah, I love all that stuff.
So I go to the show the other night, and it's funny because there's, you know, every time I go to a show, I sometimes pinch myself. You know, I'm just a podunk kid from the country who just happened to get lucky and, you know, get a gig in radio and work in this business for 3 decades now, right? So anyways, so I'm backstage and I do my interviews and stuff, and later on I'm talking with Jeff Gut, and I had just done a stager in Rival Sons is just taking the stage and whatnot, so I'm kind of walking around backstage, and two things happened to me that day which I wanted to relate to everybody, because people are always asking me, who are the jerks that you meet? And I gotta be honest, it's not many. I've talked about this a lot of times. So I'm backstage, I'm talking to Jeff Gut, I start walking away, and he goes, hey, Meltdown. And I'm like 15 feet away, I'm like, what's up? I turn around, he goes, hey, you ever see Searching for Sugar Man? And I go, yeah, I've seen that. He goes, yeah, Sisto Rodriguez is in there in the dressing room right now. He was like so excited. It was kind of cool to see a guy like Jeff Gut excited about another musician there.
And oh, yeah.
Have you seen Searching for Sugar Man?
I haven't.
It's about Sisto Rodriguez, and he put out all these records. Apparently, they sold more records like overseas and in these African countries and stuff than Elvis and everything like that. He was a huge success over there, but he didn't know about it. And so it's a great documentary. And the second thing I wanted to relay was I was walking out of one of the rooms with Robert DeLeo earlier in the day, and to me, Robert DeLeo is one of the best like rock bassists out there. And I'd met him a few times. He said hello, it's good to see me and stuff like that, and that's kind of cool. And so as I'm walking out, I said, dude, man, I gotta tell you, you're one of my favorite bass players in rock. And I said, I just played Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart on the radio because I love the bass line of that song so much. As he's walking, he puts his arm around me, thanks me, and says, are you sticking around for the show? That's the kind of people that I get the luck and the privilege to deal with on a daily basis, you know? So I just wanted to pass that along. So
they're really cool. Yeah, it's kind of like Michael Anthony and Sammy. Anyone who meets those guys, see how appreciative they seem to be of fans and just regular, you know, folks who come out, and they actually show a genuine enthusiasm for meeting people. That's really great to hear that those guys are like that in Stone Temple Pilots too.
Yeah, I haven't met Michael in years. I met him years ago, but Sammy I've met a bunch of times and have done shots with him of Cabo and stuff, and he's just the nicest guy.
So. That's a product placement right there.
Well, here's my interview with.
All day.
Yeah, right. Here's my interview with Jeff and Eric from STP. Jay from Rival Sons is coming up then, if we're lucky. And I say that loosely. We'll talk with Al Beck with Rock News coming up here. Hey, Craig, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate the time. Van Halen Rising, the book, Ted Templeman, coming out in April. And who knows, maybe we'll see some more Van Halen news coming up here in a little bit, Greg.
Check.
Meltdown.
1, 2, 3. Sibilance.
All right, I guess that means we're started. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
I don't know if I've interviewed you live in person before. Usually it's over the phone or something.
That's usually over the phone, yeah, but, for sure.
Yeah, this time you brought Eric with you. Eric, good to see you.
I'm actually at Jeff's house right now, and this is going out over the phone. So,
so
we won't go into details of why I was over at his house this morning.
Okay, yeah. So now, did you just... How many people are on your guest list for tonight?
Oh, man. I don't even know. I have an assistant that flew out from LA and was dealing with all of that. It gets crazy. Like last year, Detroit here, it was at this place in particular, it was insane how many people called me for passes and tickets. And I'm like, you know, my mom pays for tickets.
So, does she really?
She does. Yep. And, she already planned to go to the show that we're driving to after tonight. And before she even knew we were on it. And so it just worked out that we got the gig and,
Yeah, no, that show is louder than life. I saw that a couple of years ago, man. What a great just summer festival.
I've never been, so it'll be my first time. It'll be fun.
I remember the thing that stuck out to me about Louder Than Life, and maybe you guys can comment on this, but it's like the girl at the hotel knew more about whiskey and bourbon than any person I've ever met in my life. She was like 23.
It's Kentucky. It's Kentucky. That's right.
Times are changing, man. That's great.
Yeah, so anyways, how's things going with this tour with Rival Sons?
Oh, they're great. They're awesome, man. And we had Tyler Bryant in the Shakedown with us. The last show was their last one. And it's always sad to see the guys go after you bond for a while. But I'm not sure what the new band is that we have.
Warbly Jets. Yeah.
Yeah, that's who it is.
There you go. Well, you'll be able to check them out tonight.
Yeah.
But, hey, Eric, I was just looking through some things. You know, obviously, Core debut record. Now, that turns 27 on Sunday. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I knew it was turning 27, but I didn't know what day. You're right. So it was October.
No, September 29th.
29th. Yeah, it was right around the October time.
I looked it up because I remember, and we've talked about this before, but I remember Scott came to the radio station I was working at in Buffalo, and I think Core had been out for like 2 weeks, and we all were playing with Sex Type Thing, and then you guys played at the Scrapyard that night to about 30 people. And
30 it's funny. People, including the bartender, security, doorman.
And I always joke with people. I go, three guys from the band remember that night. Guess which three?
Yeah. No, that was such a fun tour because that was the first time we've been just playing Southern California mostly, you know, Los Angeles and San Diego. So to travel the country, and then 30 people at that show at the Scrapyard, and then we went to Toronto the next night, and it was 500 people and sold out. It was just crazy. So Buffalo caught on, a couple months later, and next time we came through, it was packed again.
I remember watching a show going, man, these guys are pretty good. And all of a sudden, it's like you guys finished up, jumped off the stage right to the bar.
Yeah.
You probably saw a lot of those nights.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, back in those days, that's how you got paid, basically,
right.
It's just maybe pizza and beer, and you'd be pretty happy.
You know, it's funny. I just did a blog or something the other day about, my top four, grunge bands. I never really lumped you guys in with the grunge bands. Do you consider yourself a grunge band? I guess maybe just because of the geography of the whole thing, but...
I remember I had to get a penicillin shot because I caught the grunge one time, but that's about all I remember of it.
No? All right, we'll just leave it at that. So anyways, Jeff, we'll turn things over to you here. Did you get a grunge shot too?
I had one last week.
Oh, last week. All right.
Yeah.
Working with the sore ankle and the whole thing.
Oh, man, I'm a mess these days.
So, hey, tell me about the new record that you guys have worked on. It's finished, right?
Yeah, we finished it. We finished it before we went to Europe.
Yeah.
So it's been done for a while. Yeah, it's really good. It's something new, right? It's something new. I don't think you guys have ever really...
Yeah, it's like we're sitting on this beautiful gem, and we can't wait to show it to everyone. It's just because it's a little different for us. I mean, it's always got our elements in it, but to do a whole album in that style is kind of is how it's different.
What style?
I guess you would say it's more of an acoustic bass with some extra instrumentation.
Yeah, acoustic bass with a lot of other instrumentations thrown in, but still there's a lot of electric guitars. It's just not a heavy rocking album. It's something really personal to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last record, it sounds so Stone Temple Pilots, even with a new singer and that stuff. And you'll appreciate this. So I took over Afternoon Drive from Arthur Penhollow, who was a legend in this town.
Yeah.
And it takes a little while to kind of feel your own, to kind of feel like it's your own. With this record, do you feel like you're more part of the band? Or, explain it to me.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, songwriting is such an intimate thing, and they're so good at it that when I walked into the room, I just had to kind of follow their lead, I just listen to the music, and I let that dictate where I go with it, and I feel like that's the best way to do it. I don't walk in with a bunch of ideas before I've heard the music, And you know what? If I keep doing that, it tends to work out. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely on this one that hasn't come out yet. It's I kind of put my stamp on that one a little bit more than the last one. The last one was us getting to know each other as songwriters and everything. So it was kind of
a feeling out process.
Yeah, feeling out process and understanding how they write and how to break up ideas or how everyone deals with each other, and it's a very intimate thing. It's like being married to three dudes at the same time.
and I mean, of course, you got to figure out how do you fit in, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, they gave me a lot of rope to do my thing. So yeah, I have to give them credit for that. They weren't like, hey, sound like this, you know. I just followed what I felt like Stone with Temple Pilots should be, you know, and as a fan, and I felt the duty to even throw my hat in to try out for the band, you know. So yeah, it was a great experience. And then the last one, we were only supposed to record a few songs, and then it ended up becoming a whole record because we just had so much going on. We had so much inspiration happening at the time, so it ended up becoming a whole record, which changed the whole plan of everything we were doing.
Was that like, you guys just going to record a couple songs for like, I don't know, one-off or EPs or something?
It was supposed to be like a
something like that. It always kind of, you know, what's the options there? But once we got going on it, we just continued to do a whole album. Mm-hmm. And then now that's
kept going.
That's going to change to a whole new kind of way of touring next year for us as well. So to kind of promote it. So it's all going to be different. I'm really excited.
What do you mean change the way of touring? What do you mean?
Well, you're just going to have to wait and find out now, aren't you? Because it's not Christmas time yet. You got to wait to unwrap those presents.
All right. Hey, listen, I got to ask these questions. You know, I'm like the Barbara Walters of Detroit.
Except I'm not going to cry, though. That's the difference. Because she can make people cry. Remember that? She's all her interviews, man, people just break down.
Yeah, people keep saying they want her to announce the next year, so she could say, I'm Barbara Walters and it's 2020 or whatever the old thing she used to say was.
But Oprah could do that, too. I remember. I got a good story. So like,
we're on a couch, too, by the way.
Yeah, no, years ago, when this, like, mid-90s, we were touring a lot, and I remember Scott calling me in my room, like, what are you doing? I'm like, watching Oprah. He's like, yeah, me too. And he's like, you crying? I go, yeah. It was just kind of mid-tour, all tired, and she just had that thing of just, you know, pulling out the heartstrings, and we're just cracking up, going like, oh my God, we're that far into the tour, aren't we? Where it's like, Oprah can make you cry like that.
You guys are watching Oprah in two separate rooms. Why don't you just get together and watch in the same room?
Yeah. That we kind of would hold that off for Rocky movies, the early ones. So
yeah,
always watch those together.
Cry during Rocky?
No, but we bonded.
Man, yeah, Scott was quite a character. I had a chance to interview him a couple times. Actually, I had some really good interviews with him, and it was, you know, it was obviously a sad day when we lost him. But tell me what else is going on with the band. Anything else? You guys going to wrap up this tour? Then
we got some Australia happening next year. That'll be fun with Bush and Live.
Yeah, it's going to be a good tour because we've done Australia before, but it's only been just a few cities. This time we're kind of getting across the whole country, so. And we're not playing a Kangaroo Farm, so I'm kind of disappointed about that.
I've never even been there, so it's going
to
be.
Play for a bunch of Joeys, but I guess that's not going to happen.
Joeys. Now, Eric, I didn't know that you rode motorcycles, so do you ever ride from tour date to tour date at all?
No, a lot of guys do that, especially with the different bus drivers we get. We hear a lot of the country artists, they pull trailers.
Yeah.
They just have a bunch of bikes, and I haven't done that. It's a little too dangerous to ride on tour, but it would be fun. I have a bicycle tour. That bicycle's a little safer. Take that out. It's easier to fix, but
yeah, you put some miles on that thing?
Yeah, every day. So it's kind of nice. But the great stories is like Rush, Neil Peart, the drummer.
Right.
He started off by riding bicycles, and you know they would have their schedules of how far the distance were between shows because he would ride his bike,
right,
and then play a 3-hour set. I mean, the guy was just an animal. And then as he got older, he started riding motorcycles in between places.
Yeah, but, he put like 55,000 miles on the one year.
Yeah,
he said he got recognized three times.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that's so killer. So is he one of your? Would he be one of your influences?
Oh yeah, definitely, and just an idol to look up to. I mean, you know, just the fact that he was so consistently great all the time. It's a rarity in rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was just talking to somebody else the other day. Ray Lazier is, like, as far as modern drummers, he's like an animal to watch.
Yeah, another animal. Yeah, he's great technique, great flair. Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, that's... I ride a bicycle and a Harley Davidson, and Chris Henderson from Three Doors Down used to trailer his Harley, and we go ride in different areas.
Oh, great, yeah. But especially out here... The problem is you're just going to run a ride all day, so that's the...
Like, and sometimes you got to go to work.
Yeah. Kind of pull in, do a little donut in the parking lot, and hop on the drums. That'd be living the double dream there.
Hey, so how many times on the night, on the tour bus or whatever, are you guys just sharing old stories with Jeff? You guys ever talk about the old days?
It does. It pops up, man. They have a lot of good stories. Most of them I can't repeat, but you can use your imagination.
Hey, so Riff just won a Marconi yesterday, our first one in the
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. The 48-year existence. So, where's your Grammy?
I got that in the studio at home. It's the thing that you kind of put away for a while, and then you sometimes you just like to showcase it. So it's on the mantle there at the recording studio. So that way, every time Jeff does a vocal, he has to look at it.
Which I'm fine with, because you know, I feel like not to take away from the Grammy, but I feel like the people that take the art and then put it up for an award is kind of takes away from the real reason you start in the beginning. So I've always had an anti-Grammy thing.
Or anti-award.
Yeah, just anti-award. I mean, I for the longest time, just to talk about all the gold records and all the awards, I just kind of kept in the boxes. And then kind of one day I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to put out everything. Mm. And I'm fine with it. But it really, I understand what he's saying. It's not, we don't get into music to win awards. We get into music because we love it. And then I wouldn't say you're embarrassed by it, but you're just, it's you don't want to be recognized for it, but it is an accomplishment. It's kind of a weird mixed bag there, you know what I mean? So, but once you pull it all out and showcase it all, you just kind of live with it on that.
And that was for Plush, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Plush. That was early on in your guys' career.
For Hard Rock.
Yeah.
For Plush. It's like,
Yeah, that's like when you win the Stanley Cup the first year in the league. You think, well, this is going to be easy, right?
Yeah. I can do this every year, right? Yeah.
And so that's the only one you guys have won, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, we got nominated for Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart. So,
God, what a great song it is. You know, I was thinking about this earlier today. You know, the band, I think, is so underrated as musicianship. I mean, you know, the DeLeo brothers and yourself, I mean, just unbelievable musicians. That song in particular is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It shows off what you guys do.
Yeah, it shows off a little R&B. I remember hanging out with Corgan the night before that, and he's just like, man, I really want you to win, but I want to win too. I'm like, I want you to win, but I want to win too. Like, hey.
So who won that one?
The Pumpkins won that
year. No, they did win that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well.
It was a good year, though. A lot of good bands are up there for that year, so it was good.
Yeah.
Good times.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll cut you guys loose. Thanks so much for the time. And Jeff, really great to see you back here in Michigan, and continued success.
Thanks, man. It's always good to get back here and see the family. My mom actually lives like 2 miles down the road, so.
And yeah,
my son lives over there too, so I spent most of the day over there hanging out and eating their food in the refrigerator, and pretending
grounded.
Oh yeah, absolutely every time. Yep, they never let anything go. So
it's always the weirdest thing. Like some of my friends, they go to their jobs at 9 to 5 and stuff, and I get to do this and talk to guys like you guys. Then I'm at Thanksgiving with my family. It just doesn't seem like it's real. You know, it's like I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. Like my mom was doing my laundry and stuff. It was like I felt like I was in high school again for a minute there.
Well, good luck to you guys coming up tonight.
Did she call you Jeffy?
No, she always called me Jeffrey.
Jeffrey?
Jeffrey?
That's what my dad calls Jeff Gordon. Like, it's his third son. He's like, yeah, Jeffrey. I'm like, Dad, you don't even know him. Anyways, I can talk more about Jeff Gordon some other time. But thanks so much for your time, guys.
Good to see you again, man.
Thank you.
Jeff and Eric from STP on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. They, of course, are on tour right now, at least for another couple weeks, with the guys from Rival Sons. Really good bill. Two just really great bands. Had a chance to check in with Jay Buchanan as well. I've interviewed Jay, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times. Always a great interview. Always real talkative. Just such a nice guy too. And I got to kind of describe his wardrobe. He had like this scarf he was wearing with this corduroy jacket, and his pants were like white with like blue blotches all over them. And he had these really psychedelic shoes on as well, which I think I talk about here at the beginning of the interview. He was dressed quite snazzy. It's Jay Buchanan today from Rival Sons on Talkin' Rock.
Hey, dude. First of all, congratulations on the record. You were saying. I like the record, and you like it so much you got all dressed up in your fancy pants, man. I love that.
Hey, dude, I was fancy before this record. Come on.
Then he goes, yeah, you guys are doing audio. All right, that's the way it's got to be done. But look at us. I mean, look at me anyways.
Well,
it has to be audio.
You're naked, and I'm uncomfortable.
So, no, actually, really, congratulations. So the record came out in January. I mean, all these months later. Give me your thoughts on it now.
You know, the reception that we have gotten worldwide has been enormous. And, you know, of course, like the stubborn artist in me would go like, "Hey, you know, so what? We'd be doing it anyways." Absolutely not true. To get a pat on the back for a lot of hard work feels really good. And to get some recognition for the United States, for terrestrial radio to give us a number one from our first single from Do Your Worst on the rock charts, that means something. We've worked really hard, and to get that recognition from the rock audience means everything.
Yeah, I was talking to Howard about this earlier. It's like, you know, you guys are bigger over in England and over in Europe and stuff, but the slog and the touring and everything has kind of paid off, and you guys are slowly starting to really crack this American audience, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, the short answer is yes. The long answer is actually has multiple parts to it, and for me being long-winded, I will give them all to you right now. I think that, you know, for us, we've been working in the trenches for these last 10 years, and it's not only been us, but there are other rock and roll bands and rock bands doing, you know, other types of rock bands that give their hybrid of the rhythm and blues and everything. Well, everybody's been doing what they do regardless of what's fashionable, regardless of what is en vogue or popular in any way. We started our band on a model that didn't have to do with anything that was current. We chose the medium of rock and roll, the thing that some people looked at as a novelty. We made that our statement. Now, what has been happening is rock and roll is fighting to come out of the trenches. You know, we're fortunate right now. We have more types of music out there in the world, and this day, we have more artists and more songwriters than ever before, than have ever existed, making more records. So we all win there. I'm not a Luddite who says like, "Oh, it should be like the old days." Well, I wasn't alive in the old days. But what I do know is we live in a renaissance right now that is so beautiful. And I love all of the types of music that are out there, some more than others. Some I don't like at all. But we don't need to talk about that. Rock and roll is having a little bit of a resurgence, and I think it's one thing that will continue to come back. It's part of the American vernacular. It's a birthright, definitely.
Now, you talk about songwriters and whatnot. It's like, did your move to Nashville influence you much with this latest record, or with your songwriting in general?
You know, invariably, I think that anything you do is going to influence everything you do. So, you know,
that's like the music capital. I mean, it's, you know,
well, it is. It's become the music capital, definitely. You know, on a good day, it's the third eye of the music industry, and on a bad day, it's the anus, so to speak. But it is definitely the center. For me, it absolutely influenced my narrative because I went through a large growth process. I moved away from Southern California, from Long Beach, and from where I am from, and moving to the South, you know, about 4 years ago, getting just setting up camp, moving my family out there, and watching my family graft onto that below the Mason-Dixon line Southern culture and the hospitality and everything, the slower pace, all of that's been wonderful. I think that in larger part, though, moving out into the woods, where I recently moved, you know, just 2 years ago, moving out into the woods was a great return to form for me because I'm from the woods in Southern California, like 2 miles back on a dirt road style woods.
I didn't know there was woods in Southern California, but okay.
That is very, very Michigan of you. There are plenty of woods, and there are beautiful mountains. Hello, Yosemite National Forest.
All right, there you go. I'll give you that.
Okay. All of that stuff. Anyhow, but moving back up into the mountains and reconnecting that way, it was a return to form for me because once you grow up that way, it never leaves you, you know, and that's still, it's in your DNA. So even though these woods were very different, you know, the Tennessee woods, different foliage and wildlife altogether, all the way down to the bugs and the spiders, it's very different. And the humidity, dear God, very different. But returning to nature that way was a great return to form for me, and that absolutely informed the the overall thesis of what the Feral Roots album ended up being.
No, it's a great record. There's no question. It's funny because I've never heard anyone peg it like that before, but I grew up in the country, and when I moved out here, it's 15 years ago or 16 years ago, I told my wife, I said, I want to live in the country, and we found a house in the country.
I didn't know there was country in Michigan.
There's a little bit. Just a little bit.
Hardy hard.
You do have to get out of this, out of the Metro Detroit area.
I have had the good fortune of traversing the entire state many, many times over the years, and Michigan is a very beautiful state, the mitten, so to speak. But you know, you get further up north along the lake, everything, all of the towns. It's a very, very gorgeous place.
Thanks. Now, I was listening to the record the other day, and it just struck me. And I don't do this a lot, but I'm like, Kid Rock would love this record. And I text him. I go, dude, what do you think of Rival Sons? He goes, I love them. Have you had a chance to run across one of our own local heroes around here?
Well, I run into Kid Rock every now and then. And, you know, we played together years and years back. And then he and I will run into each other and rap out. You know, it's always good to run into him. He's always got something going. And now he lives out in where I live in Franklin. So you know, I'll see him, and we've got a gaggle of common friends. You know, for Detroit's own, and, you know, in Michigan, really, I ended up moving. I need to tell you a quick story. I ended up moving right next door out in the woods to a session musician from Detroit here, and he played with, you know, Bob Seger to all kinds of different people, and his name is Blue Miller, and he had the Gibson Miller Band in the 90s. It was like a nouveau country sort of a thing, and I'd like to dedicate tonight's show to Blue. He passed away last year, and my heart goes out to his lovely wife Beth, who is not listening to this, but she's at home. And so, yeah, Blue's from here, and every time I come through town, I think about him. He was a really, really good dude.
Now, I was walking in behind you into this area here, and I saw Robert DeLeo over there. And Sunday, their debut record turns 29. You guys have been around for 10 years, theoretically speaking.
That is correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, tell me about touring with a band like Stone Temple Pilots.
They are not the first band that we have toured with that has been around much longer than us. I have the good fortune of reporting that we have had the honor of opening for so many great bands. I love touring with bands that have been around for a long time, and with bands with such prestigious catalogs, especially, you know, the DeLeo brothers and Eric and Jeff. Like, everyone is so personable, and that goes a long way with me. I really don't care for the posturing of you know, the bitter off the deep end rock star. I just think that's completely played out, and most of those people should have been actors because that's what they're doing anyways. But the DeLeo brothers and STP, they're really genuine people that make music for the right reason. Or at least that's how it looks. No, they're really, really, really great guys. Anytime you get to talk with these artists backstage, you get a keyhole peek into their world and the way they make it work, and the way they have procured their longevity, and the way they've kept the fire lit, because it's an exhausting ritual, touring and records and going back to the wall and doing it all over again every couple of years to go make records. And you get people, you know, like the Stones. I mean, for Christ's sake, like, they've been doing it forever. Everybody looks happy and youthful. I am thoroughly convinced that music is absolutely the fountain of youth. And so watching people enjoy what they do, that's good medicine for me. And I love having these discussions about what touring is and what the art is, because for those of us this deep into the trade, there are some conversations and topics that only we get, you know, and that only we can relate to, because we're the ones that are living it and reinventing in such a way. And I deeply value these conversations and these the camaraderie between musicians.
Now, it seems like this bill, like, both bands kind of complement each other. You guys went on tour with Black Sabbath, and that's a whole different dichotomy, isn't it?
dichotomy indeed. Going out with Black Sabbath is one thing. As long as this band is making sound, I think that I'll look at Black Sabbath with a huge amount of gratitude, because they gave Rival Sons a leg up. It's like something you would see in a movie or something like that. You know, they handpicked us to be the sole opener for their final tour going around the world. They looked at us and said, like, all right, you know, you guys are a large theater band and you're doing very well. It's probably time for you to grab the torch and become an arena band and instead of a theater band. Like, you guys need to come and eat at the adults table now. Mm. And they gave us that opportunity to have their stage every night for over a year. You can't get that education anywhere. You can't get it anywhere other than that. They gave us that leg up, and I will forever look at Sabbath as like the guys that did that. The guys that they gave us that opportunity. And once we got that taste of blood in our mouths, it definitely stoked a fire. We won't eat at the kids' table ever again. So
he's talking about getting an education. What do you learn from a guy like Ozzy just from watching him nightly?
Well, I think enjoying your life is the greatest example you can be to others. Because like, it doesn't matter what your toil is. Every man's got his toil. Women too. You know, you might be behind a mule, or you might be tightening lugs on a machine that builds stuff. It doesn't matter what your toil is. You have to enjoy your life. And watching Ozzy and watching Tony and Geezer, you know, watching these guys enjoy their day and enjoy their profession, that's what gets me off.
How much you enjoy this? Touring and playing new music? And
I think that it's one of those things that you have to continuously try to look at it and from a new perspective, because otherwise it becomes a Groundhog Day, right? I'm sitting here, I'm talking with you. It's an odd feeling to sit and talk about yourself with someone over the airwaves. And to the people listening, it might sound natural or it might seem natural, but it's a weird existence, right? So you have to refresh your perspective pretty often so that you don't get jaded, so you don't take these things for granted, so you don't believe the hype that people try to push up your backside, you know, because if you believe the hype, you got to believe the insults too.
Right.
And so I think it's a tightrope walk. But I don't think that that's any different from anybody else that has their job, you know, whatever you're doing, like, you know, you have to enjoy, you got to enjoy your station. You got to do your best to live a good life. You know, it doesn't matter if you hate your boss or maybe you married the wrong woman or whatever. Try to make it right. And I think you asked me if I enjoy it. Yes, on the best of days, I enjoy it immensely. It doesn't mean that it isn't a struggle for perspective and identity and all of those things, you know, but that's just part of the human condition, man.
So last things here for you. So what's coming up in the future for you guys? I know the record just came out in January and stuff. You guys are going to keep on touring the STP here for a few more weeks. Do you guys have anything like in the vault for another record? Are you guys working on anything or what's going on?
Well, it's a short answer. It could be longer, but I'll abbreviate it. When you do this for a living, it's basically it's wash, rinse, hang dry, wear, and then repeat. So, you know, we go into the studio and do our best to reinvent ourselves and come at it from a different angle artistically and figure out what the identity of the band is and to get that real, honest snapshot of who we are at that particular time. Everybody, you know, wear your Sunday best and do your thing for that family photo that's gonna live forever, you know. So we'll end up pulling together another record, and Scott and I haven't done any serious writing for it yet. He tends to, you know, get riffs together and some different things, and I write every day too, but it's kind of like you just catalog things. And we'll more than likely tour off this record for another 6 or 7 months, I'm guessing. And this is all conjecture. Really, I'm shooting from the hip because we got to see how this next single does that we're going to drop, and that will define what the next, you know, year is going to look like for us. But inevitably, this path will end with us going back into the studio and making another record, and then me hopefully sitting here with you again and you telling me how much you like that next record.
Well, no, next time you're going to interview me. So
there we go.
So brush up. What's the next single?
I don't know if we've announced that yet. Yes, we did. I know. I forget.
Boy, I'll tell you, I was going to give a little hint, but I'll just leave it at that as well. So I love that song, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I wasn't even going to talk about how great it is at the end of the record, but we'll talk about that some other time.
That sounds good to me. I sure appreciate the attention you're giving me.
All right. You got it, brother. All right, Jay. Hey, man, listen, thanks so much for taking time out here with Riff, and we do appreciate every time you come through Detroit.
Absolutely, and I want to give a huge thank you to you and to also all terrestrial radio listeners. This is a terrestrial radio. I say this every time. It is the lifeblood of communication. It's what started in your local community. It's how you knew who had calves for sale. It's how you knew who had the best price on milk or eggs, or who was going to be running for mayor or whatever, where jobs were. It's terrestrial radio. I know we have a lot of stimuli out there, but I am severely nostalgic, and I believe in radio. So thanks, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Jay Buchanan from the Rival Sons on today's Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Now, normally, that would be more than enough. We had Greg Renoff from Van Halen Rising talking about the David Lee Roth interview. Then we had Stone Temple Pilots, Eric Kretz and Jeff Gutt, of course, a local guy.
Yeah.
Then we had Jay. But then to push it over the top, we bring in Al Beck with his rock.
Yes, am I putting it over the top?
I mean, I was thinking to myself, what is this podcast missing? And your ridiculous stories is what's been missing.
That's right. That's right. No information. No confidence.
I'm like, for the last 45 minutes, I need something else. Yeah. And here we are.
Yeah.
He walks in with his Star Trek shirt.
I got my Star Trek shirt on, ready to rocket this thing into mediocrity.
All right. We're going to post this on my Instagram at WRIF Meltdown. Just to show the difference between, the guy who wears a rock and roll t-shirt.
Yeah.
And the Star Trek shirt.
Yeah.
Is that a real Star Trek emblem?
Yeah, it is. It's the Starfleet emblem. It's made to, like you said, you'll see it up on the Instagram. I'll post it on mine as well,
right.
Al Beck Radio. But it's made to look like the red shirt uniform from the original series.
Only
two people wear the red shirt. You got Scotty, and everyone who dies wears the red shirt. So that's the joke behind why I picked the red shirt.
Who's Scott? That's the Beam Me Up Scott.
Yeah. That's the engineer. Yeah.
Montgomery
Scott.
All I can think of is that one like picture where the guy's like taking a crap and he goes, "Beam me up, Scott," and the like on the side of the
I've seen that, yeah. Like a streak,
yeah, a streak going yep. way up on the on the partition,
yeah,
in the stall,
yep.
So it's stupid stuff right there.
We'll post it up on, well, it'll already have been posted by the time you hear this,
right, at WRIF Meltdown. What's is it at
Al Beck Radio.
All right, there you go. So let's start off with the Beast, Gene Simmons, little health issue going on here. Something that we're kind of familiar with around here.
Yes, well,
just because one of our coworkers
has this happen consistently.
Yeah. So what's going on?
So they had to cancel a few of the Kiss shows on Kiss's final tour, and we did kind of know maybe it was a medically related thing, but we finally have a couple more details. It turns out Gene Simmons is having some procedures to deal with kidney stones. I guess he was checked into the Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles. Angeles to deal with some kidney stones. He had a stent inserted into his urethra to help the kidney stones pass easier.
Oh, my
yep.
God.
And the stent is supposed to be removed in about a week's time from now.
Oh,
that's why they had to cancel a few shows. But, yeah, no, our coworker.
Come on. He just can't just go up and play some shows.
Screaming Scott here at the radio station gets him at least once a year.
And there's a reason they call him Screaming. Yeah. No, I mean, with the, you know, having to pass those things.
Oh, I know. That's probably the sound he makes when he does it.
Oh, my God. I don't even want to hear any more about this story. All right. Well, good luck to Gene.
Yeah. Better health ahead for him, I hope.
So I was talking with Eric and us, speaking of which, I was talking with Eric and Scott about grunge, and which Eric said that he, you know, had to take some penicillin one time because he had to get a shot because he had contracted the grunge.
Oh, boy.
So, anyways.
It does kind of sound like like grunge is a thing you don't want to catch.
So, speaking of that, Nirvana, they did the MTV Unplugged. Do you think that was the most popular one?
I think so. I mean, I was going to say that it might be one of the biggest, like, acoustic Unplugged albums out there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the one with the Alice in Chains was really killer as well. But, anyways, that was 25 years ago, and they're giving a little redo,
like you were kind of saying. They did this thing November 18th of 1993 was when it was recorded, and so they are going to be celebrating the 25th anniversary of the MTV Unplugged in New York album from Nirvana with a vinyl reissue. The 25th anniversary vinyl reissue is an expanded edition, including 5 rehearsal performances previously only available on a 2007 DVD release, with videos, with a run through of Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World, serving as the first preview of the package as well. Now, if you want to pick this up, I know you're a big vinyl collector. I'm sure there are others out there as well. It'll be released, I think, November 1st is the date on that.
Just in time for your Christmas shopping.
That's right.
Now, this weekend, of course, something happens which I'm super excited about. You know what that is.
What? Something you're excited about?
Yeah.
I don't
know. Come on, dude. What time of year is it?
Oh, hockey.
That's right. Hockey's starting up. And I guess the NHL, unlike the NFL, has teamed up with a rock band.
Yes.
How about that? What a novel concept.
Well, you know what? That's one thing that is great about hockey is hockey and rock seem to go together, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they've also teamed up with Green Day for a little partnership over the next couple of years, according to Billboard. Now, here's the deal. The first instance where Green Day is teaming with the NHL will be taking place during the October 9th telecast of NBCSN's Wednesday Night Hockey, which, as we record, this is coming up here over the weekend, as you said.
What's the song?
Green Day will be premiering their new track, Ready, Fire, Aim, from the upcoming album, Father of All.
Ready, fire, aim sounds like how I shoot on the ice.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm ready, then I fire, then I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, well, as an added bonus, the track will be used as the show's theme for the 2019-2020 NHL season. Also, they're going to be partnering again with the NHL as Green Day is going to be giving a headlining performance during the season's NHL All-Star Game, which will be taking place January 25th of 2020 in St. Louis.
You know, it is kind of cool when you watch like the WWE and stuff. Like right now, they've got Skillet as their intro, and whatever they have, they do their pay-per-views, like, I don't know, I guess 12 times a year or whatever it is, and some different other ones, and they use some of these rock bands. It would be kind of cool, actually, sometimes to hear like maybe a song that's like 30 years old, you know, or something. That'd be kind of neat. But anyways, it is cool when the NHL, like I said, is using the Green Day stuff.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And yeah, J-Lo and Shakira, by the way, that sounds like perfect. A perfect halftime show to watch with the sound off.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? I mean, I've never interested. I'm actually kind of glad when the halftime show is something I'm not interested in because that's the time to go to the bathroom.
Well,
I'd rather just watch the football game.
Of course. But I'll tell you this much. I mean, J-Lo is really hot, right? But Shakira is hotter as far as I'm concerned. And one time my wife said to me,
so you're still going to watch it. You still want to listen to it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to listen to it. Yeah. I don't know one song from Shakira, but God, is she hot. So I said to my wife one time, I go, look at how hot she is. And my wife says, you could see her roots. I'm like, I could give a rat's ass about her roots.
That's not where you're
looking.
I don't
care about her roots. Yeah. I like that look where it's blonde and then dark in the roots. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm all right with
that.
Well, so. I did mention that song they're going to be using is off of the new album, which if you do want to pick that up, Green Day going to be releasing the new album February 7th of 2020.
Okay, and then they got the big Hella Mega tour coming up next year.
Yep.
All right, we got to go take a picture for this for the gram. And we'll see. Yeah, we should do that. Maybe, like, Kev, like, to vote, which shirt would you wear? Maybe
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that? Trekkie. Nanu, nanu.
You're mixing up your franchises again.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm supposed to talk with Tom Kiefer coming up this week, and I'm going to say that because I'm pretty confident that Tom will
He'll follow through, I think.
Tom's awesome. Love that guy. We've got the Glorious Sons coming up. Speaking of Skillet, I'm supposed to talk with John Cooper coming up. What a great guy. Just a super, super nice guy. Him and his wife are just fantastic. The whole band is great, by the way. Just really nice people. So, yes. So subscribe if you've made it this far, a 5-star rating. Check back periodically. We've kind of scrapped the Friday thing because the interviews just keep getting backed up. So I got this Johnny Z book about heavy metal, about Megaforce Records. I still have to throw that interview up here. So we got a lot of stuff coming. So anyways, at Al Beck Radio, at Meltdown WRIF, but on my Instagram, WRIF Meltdown. And as always, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.